Thanks everyone for coming. So today I'm going to talk about this topological quantum computation and the compilation. Topological quantum computing is like a different protocol from the standard circuit model, but it has been proved that they have the same computational power up to polynomial reduction. And the advantage of topological quantum computing is that because the way the information is encoded and the quantum gates are applied, it is automatically fault tolerant. So it tolerates local errors in a natural way. So that's the advantage. And so today, I'll first give a general introduction on how this topological quantum computation works, and then I'll restrict myself to a specific annual system, SU2 level 4, and I'll also explain why we are interested in this system, and I'll show how do we make this annual system into a universal topological quantum computer. And then in the third part, I'll show if we want to run a quantum algorithm on this topological quantum computer, then how efficiently we can decompose any unitary gate into the gate set we obtained from SU2 level 4. And then finally, if I have time, I'll also talk about some other related work. Okay. Okay, so first of all, for this topological quantum computing, the physical systems we'll be using is the 2+1 dimensional topological faces of matter. For example, toric coat, or more generally, the Levin-Wien model. So given such a quantum system, the anions are the quasi-particles or topological excitations. And of course, there are abelian anions like bosons, fermions, and also there are non-abelian anions. For the purpose of universal quantum computing, the non-abelian anions are of particular interest to us. So I'll focus on these non-abelian anions. And the different anions have different charges or anion types. For example, in the toric coat, we have the vacuum one, and we have the E particle and M particles, and so on. Right. So in the standard circuit model, we first of all have a Hilbert space where we can encode the information, the quantum states, and then we can apply quantum gates to transform one state to another, and eventually we can do measurement of the states. And I'll show that in this topological phase of matter, we can do exactly the same thing. We can do encoding quantum gates and measurement. So first of all, we need to have a vector space to encode the information. And this is, so this information is encoded in the Hilbert space of multi-anions. So what this means is if we take, for example, some anions, some non-abelian anions of type A, and then if we require their total charge is B, then there is usually a degenerate Hilbert space associated to this configuration. And this is the space where we can encode this information. If we choose this anion properly, then the dimension of this Hilbert space could be 2 or 3 or 5. And so we have a qubit or qdit in general. We use this notation VB IAAA to denote this Hilbert space. Okay, and then for quantum gates, these are obtained by braiding of anions. So this means if we have some anions localized in the surface, then exchanging two anions will undergo a unitary transformation on the underlying Hilbert space. And these are the quantum gates we can apply to this Hilbert space. If you look at the process in the 2 plus 1 dimensional, then the trajectories for this exchanging of anions is exactly an element in the Bredt group. And because the exchange of anions gives us a unitary transformation, so that means actually we get a representation of the n-strand Bredt group if we have n anions on the surface. So the set of gates we can get exactly from braiding are the image of this Bredt group representation. So in some sense, the size of this representation is basically the power of the topological quantum computer you can get from this system. All right, so finally, we need to be able to measure the states. And this is done by fusion of anions. So if we have two anions, A and B, and if we bring them together, then if we fuse them together, then there will be different possible outcomes, like some other anions will emerge from this fusion. And this is called the fusion rules. So more generally, if we consider three anions, we can first fuse A and B to get a anion X, and then continue to fuse X with C to get outcome D. Okay. So how does this relate to the measurement? I'll first show. We call this triple the anion triple ABC consistent if C is a possible outcome for fusing A and B. We can get orthonormal basis for this Hilbert space, the Hilbert space with three anions ABC with total charge D. So an orthonormal basis of this Hilbert space is obtained by like all color rings X, so that ABX is consistent and XC D is consistent. And so all these possible color rings form an orthogonal basis for this Hilbert space. And then fusion of these two anions A and B just projects the quantum state into one of the basis elements. And this is how the measurement works. So basically, fusion is a projection to a subspace of the Hilbert space. And if you choose the basis properly, then this is just a measurement with respect to the standard computational basis. Okay, so roughly this is the picture for the Hilbert space, for the quantum gates and the measurement. And this is a general process for topological computing. So we start with the vacuum, and then we create some anions on the surface, and then we braid these anions to apply unitary transformations to this Hilbert space. And then eventually we fuse these anions to make a measurement. All right. So mathematically, this whole process, the topological phase of matter, mathematically is described by the so-called unitary modular tensor category. Okay, so this is a category. A category has objects, has morphisms, but a unitary modular tensor category has a lot more extra structures. But here I'll only list some of like minimal structures that are necessary for the use of topological quantum computing. So first of all, in this category, a modular tensor category has a set of simple objects with denoted by A, B, C, and you should think of each of the object as an anion type. And mathematically, they are simple objects in the category. And then we have fusion rules. So this means when we fuse two anions A and B, then there will be different outcomes. Here we assume NABC, the coefficient is either 0 or 1. If NABC is 1, then this means C is a possible outcome for fusion A and B. And if it is 0, then C is not, it's never a outcome. So mathematically, this means we can form the tensor product of two objects, A and B. And then the result is the direct sum of some other simple objects. And so ABC is consistent if NABC is equal to 1 by this definition of fusion. Okay, so more importantly, so given n anions, A1, A2, AN, so we have a Hilbert space, the homomorphism space from B to A1 tensor A2 tensor AN, and this is exactly the Hilbert space of n anions, A1, AN, with total charge B. And for this Hilbert space, there are natural choices for orthogonal bases. And these are called the fusion tree bases. For example, if we take two anions, A1, A2, with total charge B, then this Hilbert space is of dimension 1. And we use this tree to represent this single basis element. If we consider three anions, then it's more complicated. So if we consider A1, A2, A3 with total charge B, then a basis of this Hilbert space is given by all possible color rings of X so that A1, A2, X is consistent and X, A3, B is consistent. And so these form a orthogonal basis for this Hilbert space. But we can also first fuse A2 with A3 and then finally fuse with A1. So that gives us another basis actually. So here this is the basis we just talked about. We first fuse A1, A2, and then fuse with A3. And here we get another basis by first fusing A2, A3, and then fusing with A1. So there are two sets of bases, orthogonal bases of the same Hilbert space. So they must be related by a change of basis. And so these are the so-called 6J symbols or F matrices. This basis is related to this basis by the 6J symbols, and we also call this move the F move. So we can the F move changes one basis to another basis. Another important type of move is the R move. So which means if we take two anions A1, A2, and then if we braid these two anions, then we get a scalar RB A2 A1 times this basis element. And this is the so-called R move. So apparently, the F move and R move needs to satisfy some properties in order to be consistent. So for example, they need to satisfy the pentagon equation and the hexagon equations. But here I'll not talk about those properties. Okay, so the F move and R move will be the most important techniques we will be using in terms of calculations. So in the following, I'll talk about a specific anion system, SU2 level 4, and show how can we make this system into a universal computer. So first of all, SU2 level 4, mathematically, this is also the same as SO3 level 2. As a modular tensor category, so it has five anion types, which are labeled by 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Here, 0 is a vacuum. And the fusion rules are defined as follows. So so that means when they fuse I with J, then if K is the outcome, then that the sufficient and necessary condition is that, first of all, IJK satisfy the triangle inequality. And then secondly, their sum must be even. And then finally, their sum must be no more than 8. Okay, so this is the requirement for these fusion rules. For example, when they fuse 0 with any anion K, then they get K. Well, this is true because 0 is just the vacuum. And if it fuse 1 with 1, then we either get vacuum or we get 2. And if it fuse 2 with 2, we get 0 or 2 or 4. And also, we know the R symbols for this theory. And we also know the F matrices. And so essentially, we know all the data about this theory. And we will see what computational power we can get in this system in terms of computing. So to carry out computation, I need to find a Hilbert space to encode my state. And so here is how we encode the information. We take four anions, each of which has charge 1, and we require their total charge to be 2. And we use this specific fusion tree basis as our computational basis. So that means, recall that a computational basis comes from all possible colorings A and B, so that this fusion tree is consistent. For example, if we fuse the first two anions, we get either 0 or 2. So A is either 0 or 2, and similarly B is also 0 or 2. But we also require A fuse B to get 2. So that means A and B cannot both be 0, because 0 fuse 0 get 0. So here, actually, these three are all the possible choices for the pair AB, and 2, 2, 0, 2, and 2, 0. And this is the computational basis we will be using. So that means actually we have a Q-trait space. And this is 0, this is 1, this is 2. Okay. All right, so now let's see what quantum gates we can get from braiding in this one Q-trait model. So as I said, the set of gates we get from braiding are exactly the image of the braid group representations. But we know here we have four anions, so that means we need to consider the four-strand braid group. And it has three standard generators, sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3. Here, so here, this is sigma 1, sigma 2, and sigma 3. So we just need to compute what are the quantum gates corresponding to these three generators and see what the group is generated from these generators. So apparently, sigma 1 and sigma 3, they are kind of symmetric. So I'll only show how do we compute sigma 1 and then maybe give a brief explanation of computing sigma 2. So here is sigma 1. So if you look at the red portion, so we can do a R move to consider transform this picture to this picture. And you see that after this R move, x, y are not changed, and we only get a scalar. So this means sigma 1 is just a diagonal gate. And it, precisely, these are the coefficients of the entries on the diagonals for sigma 1. Computing sigma 2 is a lot more involved. So you see, this is originally this is a picture for sigma 2, and basically the idea is we need to apply some F moves to convert this picture to a picture similar to this, where we can apply the R move. But before applying R moves, we need to apply F moves. So for example, here in the first step, if you look at the red portion, we can apply F move to change this picture to this picture. And then similarly, we can apply some other moves to change the shape of the basis. And eventually we also need to transform the basis back to the original computational basis. So this is the rough idea, and I will not go into more details. But anyway, so by direct calculations, so we get the matrices for these three generators, sigma 1, sigma 2, and sigma 3. And so so we just need to see what is the group generated by these three quantum gates. And actually, it can be shown that these matrices generate the exactly the Clifford group up to global phases. Okay, so now let's see what are the two Q-trait gate we can get from braiding. So first of all, this is the model we use to encode a two Q-trait. So on the left, this is the first Q-trait. On the right, this is the second Q-trait. And also we require the total charge of these two anions again to be 2, okay? But one needs to be careful that any valid quantum gates, any valid two Q-trait gates must preserve this subspace, okay? So this one corresponds to the left piece, and this one corresponds to the right piece. But this is only a subspace of the total Hilbert space. Yes?
Start from
here,
like this model.
Yeah, I mean, how do you impose to choose there? I guess you can create the pairs of ones.
Yeah, I mean, you can first create 8 anions with charge 1, and then you measure the first 4 anions. If it is 2, then it's good. If it's not, then you just restart. Okay, and as I said, not every braiding is a valid quantum gate, because usually there will be leakages. The braiding will go out of this subspace. So when we have to be really careful to choose proper braidings that preserve this subspace, And fortunately, we can find one. So this one, one can verify that this complicated braiding really preserves the subspace. And actually it is the form of this gate is pretty nice. So one can check it is just a permutation gate that we call the sum gate, which maps ij to I plus j modulo 3. Okay, so this is a Q-trait analog of control knot gate. So now we have the two Q-trait sum gate, and we have the one Q-trait Clifford gate. And combine these two, we get exactly the two Q-trait Clifford gates. And actually, one can show that basically these are the only two Q-trait gates we can get from braiding. So the story so far seems bad because we can only get a finite set of gates from braiding. So in order to make this system to be universal, we have to introduce extra resources. And the extra resource we'll be using is the measurement. And of course, we can't just use arbitrary measurement because, you know, so now we have already have the whole Clifford group, then basically if you are allowed arbitrary measurement, then you can always make it into universal. So here the point is that the measurement has to be physically realistic. Okay? And explicitly here, the measurement we'll be using is just to check whether or not the total charge of two anions is trivial. And this is all we need. Like we take two anions, let's say charge one, and we fuse them. We want to know if the outcome is trivial or not. And this is all we need. So specifically to this model, so if you look at this one Q chain model, then if we fuse the first, if we measure the total charge of the first two anions, because one fuses one is either trivial or two. So if we measure the, their total charge, and if our outcome is trivial, like zero, then we project our state to this state, 0, 2. If the outcome is two, then we project the state in this subspace spanned by 2, 2, and 2, 0. But the state in this space will still keep coherent. So that means this measurement M applied to this one Q trait is just a projection onto the span of this two basis element or its complement. And another way to say it, this measurement is the same as the projection to the span of the 0, 2, or is its orthogonal complement. Okay? Okay, so this measurement M, first of all, I need to point out that this is strictly stronger than the measurement with respect to the standard computational basis. Okay? And a key point to utilize this measurement M is to somehow we can, so with the help of this measurement M, we can construct ancillary state 0 plus 1 minus 2. And then we can convert this state into a diagonal gate, the flip gate 1, 1 minus 1. And this flip gate is a non-Clifford gate. So combining on the Clifford gate we get from breeding and the flip gate we get from measurement, we get a universal gate set. Okay. Just a summary of what I've said. In the SU2 level 4 anion systems, if we use 4 anions with charge 1 and with their total charge 2 at the 1Q trait, then breeding with this measurement M from a universal gate set. Okay. Okay, so you may wonder why do we even care about this system? I mean, there are many other systems where we can make into universal. Well, part of the reason is as follows. So actually, this SU2 is defined for any integer k, 2, 3, or 4. So in among these theories, so first of all, as long as k is not equal to 2 or 4, then it can be proved that we can get a universal gate set from breeding alone. Okay, so this is good. We just need to breed anions. No extra measurements are required. But the bad thing is there's not much evidence that this theory model any physical systems. In particular, for example, k equals 3, SU2 level 3 contains the famous Fibonacci theory. Okay. So what about the rest of two theories? Well, for k equals 2, this is the Ising anion system. And physically, this is believed to model the fractional quantum hole at 5 half. But then here the bad thing is, even if we add this some physical measurement to this system, is still classically simulatable. So that means we can't get a universal quantum computer from the Ising system. Well, so now there's one last system, which is the SU2 level 4 we just talked about. So for this system, for this theory, it is believed that it models the fractional quantum hole at a third. And so this is kind of promising. And we just showed that braiding plus this measurement M is a universal for computing. So that's why we are interested in this theory, SU2 level 4. Okay, so I guess this is roughly the story about SU2 level 4. So we get a universal gate set, the Clifford plus the flip. And now, so I'll give a brief introduction on how we would decompose the unitary gate into the Clifford plus the flip gate set. And I'll call this gate set the metathetic basis, and partially because SO2 level 4 is the same as SO3 level 2, and SO3 level 2 is called the metathetic anion systems. So here I'll call this gate set Clifford plus flip the metathetic basis. And we know by Solovay Ketaev algorithm, we can always approximate any quantum gate with gates in the universal gate set. And the complexity is roughly log to the power c, log to the power 3.97 of 1 over epsilon, where epsilon is the precision. But the story we learned from the qubit case, usually this complexity is not optimal, and it can be improved by using some specific techniques from number theories. For example, in the qubit Clifford plus power eight gate set, actually we can improve this efficiency from 3.97 to 1 to linear in log. Okay. And in this case, we actually have a similar story. So if you look at all the quantum gates in the metathetic basis, sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3, and the flip gate. So the entries of these matrices are all contained in this specific ring. And this is similar to the Clifford plus power eight gate case, and we can use some techniques in number theories to give a better complexity approximation. So first of all, this is the result for the exact synthesis. If one Q-trait unitary gate can be implemented exactly over this metathetic basis, if and only if its entries are contained in this ring. in this ring. Right, so far the story is still the same, basically the same as the Clifford plus the power 8 gate. For a multi-Q-trait synthesis, we can show that if we take B to be arbitrary NQ-trait basis element, then the axial reflection, so which maps a basis element to itself, except for B, where it flips the sign for the B basis element. So this is a entangled diagonal NQ-trade gate, and we can show that this gate can be implemented exactly. We can't show a similar result for multi-Q-trade gate synthesis. Okay. All right. So then, for the approximations. So first of all, the key result we will be using is that for any two-level NQ-trade state, we can approximate it within epsilon by a circuit over the metaplastic basis with complexity linear in log 1 over epsilon. Okay. And this is the key tool we'll be using in terms of approximations. And so here we have two flavors for this circuit synthesis. So first of all, if we don't use ancillary, then by using some householder reflection techniques, then we can approximate any NQ-trade unitary in 3 to the 2n times log. Okay, this part is optimal, but we have some other costs exponential in n. This is a little bit bad, but not so bad, because this cost does not depend on the precision epsilon. Okay. Another flavor is by using ancillaries. So if we are allowed to use n ancillaries, some ancillaries, then now we can approximate an NQ-trade unitary gate in 3 to the power 2n times n times log. And this is almost optimal, except here, again, we have an extra n overhead. And so that's roughly the story for these approximations. And I have to say it's almost the same at the Clifford plus power 8, except we have some this little overhead. This is overall optimal from the complexity theories. Okay, so I guess that's the story about approximations. I guess I still have a little bit of time, and so maybe I'll just talk some other related work. And apparently I didn't have time to go into any details of them, but I would be happy to talk offline about this related work. So we know basically the topological phases of matter are described also by topological quantum field theories. So first of all, in the 2+1 TQFT, the topological quantum field theories, we know the Levin-Wien model, or mathematically trivial model, uses a fusion category as input, and then it produces 2+1 TQFTs. But then we can show that there is a generalization of this construction to multi-fusion categories. A multi-fusion category basically means a fusion category where the vacuum is not a simple object in the category. So I'm also interested in one-dimensional higher for 3+1 TQFTs. And in this case, we will be using the so-called J-crossed braided fusion category, and we can construct a trivial type of 3+1 TQFTs. And in particular, we get a state sum invariant of four-dimensional manifolds, and this generalizes some other invariants in literature, for example, the Kring-Yetter invariant or the Dargaff-Witten invariant. And a future direction to study is for this 3+1 TQFT, what is the braiding statistics? for the corresponding topological phases of matter. And it also has some applications in the four-dimensional topology because it produces invariance of smooth for manifold. And this might help to distinguish smooth structures on a given four manifold. Okay, some other work, maybe not directly related to this SU2 level 4. We know the graph states are regularly defined by the Hadamard gate, but here we can generalize it by using general Hadamard matrices. And also, we also studied a quantum analog of the classical Maxwell-Minkard theorems, which basically asks, so given a tensor network, we ask what is the maximal rank of this tensor network? And this has some connections with the quantum satisfiability problems and entanglement entropies. Okay, and finally here is the summary of my research interest. My primary interest is in topological quantum computation, circuit compilations, and quantum arithmetics. And then I'm also interested in TQFTs, higher categories like modular tensor categories, quantum invariance, and also have interest in a number of subjects in quantum information. I guess that's all I want to say today. Thank you.
Can I ask you, maybe it's an unfair question, but you discarded SU2 level K except for 2 and 4 on the basis there wasn't much physical evidence. Can you give me a sense of what the status there is? Is it a problem that people haven't been creative enough, or is it there's a physical barrier? Or a barrier to see?
You mean why other theories are not...
Why the other levels are physical in some sense?
Except for K equals 2 and 4, all those, at least for now, people haven't found any physical systems which obey the same statistics as described in those theories. Although recently, I think there is a conjecture that the fractional quantum hole at 12/5 may be described by SU2 level 3. If this is true, then of course this is exciting because we know SU2 level 3 is universal vibrating. But this evidence is not that strong, I think, up to now. So it's still open, like whether or not is really described by SU2 level 3.
Do you think you could somehow use the techniques that you've been describing to somehow rule it out to show that the system would have to have some kind of unphysical property if it was, say, SU2 level 5?
It's just that, you know, for any physical system, you can see like what types of anions are there in this system. And like, say, what is their central charge? What is their braiding statistics? And you just compare if this matches some SU2 level K theories. And people so far haven't found any physical systems which are kind of similar to SU2 level K except for 2 and 4. So.
So you talked about these TQFTs in 3+1 versions.
Yeah.
Although you didn't explain anything about them, is there any progress about understanding the excitations, the systematic understanding?
Sorry,
is there any systematic understanding of excitations in, like, for example, in Krenn-Yetter's kind of models, where you classify the excitations?
Oh, excitation. Not completely, I think. So, for example, in the so I mentioned one theory. This Kreyn-Yetter theory. So for this theory, mathematically, some people can already write down this Hamiltonian corresponding to this TQFT. In this case, I think the excitations are kind of trivial, in the sense that the Hilbert space is non-degenerate; it's only dimension one. But for the more general case, if we use a J cross the Brady fusion category, then I think the excitation statistics is not clear, because you need to consider, instead of particle like excitations, you need to consider the loop like excitations, and then in that case, you need to study the representations of the so-called loop Brady group, and that's a lot more complicated mathematically, and I think it hasn't been well studied yet.
Yeah. Other questions? If not, let's thank Sean again.
Thanks.